Session number 12913.
Mr. Bellows, reel 5.
And then he took he had signal flags actually on his arm because he was a signaller. He took those out because they were brass and put in a company sergeant major's crown. Promoted himself immediately. Well, he went and collected this lorry with the driver. He had all the correct papers and drove out with the driver to the pyramids where this petrol was going to be transferred. Now, someone must have blown the whistle somewhere because it was late at night, and as he stopped the lorry and got out, a whistle sounded and red caps started to appear. Bill done a runner. The poor old RASC driver, he was still sitting in his lorry. He didn't know what was happening. He thought he was on official duties. There must have been someone else in this with him, because the RASC driver, he got court-martialed. Got 6 months. Bill got away with it. Next time I saw Bill was in Malta. He was a gunner on one of the merchant ships. How the blaze he ever became a gunner, I don't know. Well, let's make a bit of progress. I suppose from there, we were in Egypt and we're off to Malta. We moved down to Alex and I went on to a ship called the Brackenshire, a naval supply ship. But before I go on, I should mention the fact that in the harbour in Alex was part of the French fleet. There were somewhere around about 6 ships, including a battleship. On the back end of one of them, they had big wooden like crates which they kept pigs, animals, which they ate. I mean, they say they're like pigs, so no, they live like them. And also, one of them had a seaplane on it. Now, these boats were interned, but they were, the French sailors were allowed ashore. They'd come ashore at night, dressed up, and make their way to the French quarters. We didn't used to speak to them, they didn't used to speak to us. But the Navy had the tip off because one morning the French fleet attempted to escape out of a harbour. They got up steam and was all ready to go. And when they found that the entrance to the harbour was surrounded by units of the Med fleet waiting for them to come out, they promptly dropped anchor again. Their ships were boarded and their ships were then made immobile. They didn't come back into action again, of course, until Vichy France came over to our side. But it was a funny war when you got, they were actually enemies, and they had the freedom of the city. Now we'll get back to our trip to Malta.
I think you went in May 1941.
Yes. As you say, it was May. May 41. Went on the Brackenshire. She was a naval supply ship. And we were part of a sweep by part of the Med fleet, the illustrious was the aircraft carrier that was with us, plus various other cruisers and what have you. And we were astern of them, coming through the Med. There was a bit of a flap on when the planes took off, because apparently there had been a sighting of enemy ships. One plane overshot and went straight in, and I believe they lost the crew. After that, it settled down, and then a flotilla of destroyers came alongside to refuel, and all the oil pipes was laid out, and the lines was put across to the destroyers. One destroyer was alongside, and I'm looking, and there was an officer leaning on the bridge, on the catwalk, with a duffel coat on. And one of the sailors on the ship I was on the Brackenshire, said, "Do you know who that is?" I said, "Nope." He said, "That's, the ship was the Kelly."
Mountbatten.
He said, "That's Mountbatten." He said, I said, "Well," he said, "well, he's a, cousin or something of a king or a queen." I said, "Oh, well," we were talking, and he was just leaning over the side, talking, and that was the first time we saw him, and that was the first time that destroyers had been refueled at sea under speed, because they daren't cut their speed in case there had been any submarines in the vicinity, and it was the first time it had ever been done at sea and was done successfully. Of course, it wasn't long after that that Kelly got sunk. Well, we pulled into Valletta and went to a place called Goudia. That's a little village right on the edge of the aerodrome, not far from Nuka. Now, we were in a palace there, and it was a walled palace.
A what palace?
Walled. There was a wall all the way around it, and it was quite a comfortable billet. We were under canvas inside, dug into in the grounds. There was oranges, lemons, olives, grapes. Oh, it was a beautiful place, but we weren't allowed to touch a thing. Don't touch a thing. And each one of our tents was dug in to a depth of about 2 foot 6, so that when you went to bed, you were under the cover of the ground. Now, part of my duties there was to go on top of a tower every time there was an air raid. The tower was right in the middle of the palace. It was separate to the main building. And from the top of this tower, you had to plot with the intelligence section, plot the falling of the bombs and any other thing that took place. You were right out in the open, and Jerry must have used that tower as an aiming point for Lucca Airport and the runways, because there was only one that he really bombed us. And he must have known what we were doing, because we were right out in the open. Now, when they did bomb, a bomb dropped, and it dropped right by the side of the tower. There were several men that were in a tent, and they were buried completely. And they thought they were dead, but they dug them out, except one. And suddenly, an arm came up through the rubble, and this chap called Tug Wilson. He'd heard bombs whistling and pulled the blanket over his head, which saved his life because all the dirt covered him. But the blanket held enough air in there for him to breathe. So we dug him out. Next morning, the major, our major, he was in charge of all of our funds, our sports gear and everything else, because we had a little hut by the side of the tower, which all this was kept in, because we had quite a bit of stuff, because we'd brought it with us from Egypt, so that we could have play football and things like that. Also in there, he had a little bag with what the place was, they said it was the PRI.
President of the Regimental Institute.
It was, and that was the PRI funds, was in there in a little leather draw bag. And this major came up, he said, there was quite a bit of money in that bag, he said, and it don't look as if I'll ever find it again. With that, there was an olive tree, and hanging from the olive tree by its string was the bag. Well, he said, that was lucky. We thought it was unlucky for us, because if we'd have seen it before him, he wouldn't have had it. But that's how things go. Now, we did have quite a few butterfly bombs dropped through us. That was the anti-personnel bombs, which were about the size of a milk tin, small milk tin. And when they were dropped out of a canister, the sides and ends used to open up, allowing the canister to drop on the end of a wire, and the ends and sides used to then spin, and they used to drift down to the ground. We had quite a few of those through us, and one of them pitched right in the doorway of what was our orderly room. The men were watching the raid from inside the room, just inside, when the bomb exploded. It wounded about two of them and killed another one. This was one of these were the only two men that were actually killed and wounded inside of that building. It was fantastic, really, because from the top of that tower, one day there was a company less than half a mile from us, and there was a Bofa gun there with them. And the planes came just over the top of us, let go, and direct hit on that Bofa gun and wiped it clean out. Another day I was up there, and there was a power cable run through the fields. And Malta, all fields, they've got no hedges, it's all stone walls and little fields. And a piece of shrapnel cut the power cable, and it fell into one of these fields. It was just stubble and was burning. A quartermaster sergeant ran out with about four men that were on guard with shovels to put it out. Why, I don't know. It couldn't have done much damage. And the men started to throw dirt on the end, because there was still sort of flame coming from the end of the cable. The sergeant said, I saw him grab the spade out of a man's hand. This sergeant just got a, his name was Flatman. He grabbed the spade out of this man's hand, dug it into the earth, and then went right up to the cable to put it on. The cable seemed to jump like a snake, There was a big flash. He was dead. Why he'd done it, I'll never know. Another day I was up there, and a parachutist came down, Italian. And the natives in Malta always had a lookout. It was a surface charter, something like a nesting hut, only it was thick mud or rock, as they do everything with. And they always had a lookout at the door. This time it was a young lad, and as this parachutist dropped, the village turned out. They came out of these shelters, not only from that village, but from various shelters in an area, I should think, of about a mile square, all converging on the spot where this parachutist would have landed. They're all racing over the fields, climbing these walls, and see them now, like animals, screaming. Some had anything for weapons, rocks in their hands. The intention was to absolutely, if that parachutist had lived, to batter him to death. They were baying like hounds. In front of them, was running the guard, fixed bayonets, trying to beat them. They managed to get there before the natives did, the Maltese, but he was already dead because he'd had a Roman candle and he'd come down like a stone. His chute was burning. Now,
what nationality was he?
He was Italian. And I thought myself, if I get to him first, I'm going to have his shoes. Because a nice pair of walking out shoes would have been a nice thing to have got. He had on an old pair of shoes with patches sewn on the outside. Looks as if they were done by an amateur. But where he'd landed with such force, both of the soles were cracked right across and you could see every bone in his feet. Not a bit of blood, because the blood had been just driven up to his body. So the poor old Maltese, they didn't get him and I never got the shoes. But they used to, if they could, get to him, to them, they would rip them to pieces. They'd open fire on them. That is, the Maltese regiment would open fire on any parachutist that dropped. They hated them, Germans and Italians.
Because of the bombing?
Because of the bombing. The bombing was terrific, terrible. We had, I think it was over 3,000 air raids while I was there. One of our jobs was to discharge convoys if they managed to get through. And we would have to work on ships and work as stevedores. As a matter of fact, my regiment can claim one of our, well, I worked as a stevedore after the war, but we never discharged as much as, and when we were on piecework after the war, as we did then during the war. Of course, we had more men, and we really went to town. One day, there was one ship that came in, had been bombed, and it was full of, the lower holds was full of flimsies, which is like 4-gallon petrol cans made of just tin, oblong, and squared. And a lot of those had been ruptured, so that the bilges and everything else was full of petrol and the fumes was terrible. we had to go down the hatch. Gas mask would have been no good. We had skips to load with the cans. We had to go down one end of the hatch, load the skip, up the other end of the hatch, up the ladder, and then go up into the bows of the ship and get fresh air. And there was a continuous line of men doing this. You couldn't stay down there for more than one skip, or else you would have been knocked out. One Lance Corporal stayed down there. He stayed in there for about three skips. So they got him out and got him to hospital. And he nearly died with octane poisoning. If anybody'd lit a match, the whole of Valletta would have gone up. But we discharged that ship. I was there also when the Penelope was in. Pepper box. She was just full of shrapnel holes and plaques of wood. They didn't solder them up, seal them up at all. They just put in plugs of wood. And that ship, when she was attacked, anybody that was near was commandeered for passing up ammunition. And she managed to get away and went to America. Now, most of her crew were sent inland to recuperate after what they'd been through, and were called back ready for order to sail. I was also there when the Ohio came in. That was a ship that really helped to save Malta, because we were down to, well, we were really on the way to starvation. People don't realise it, but there was only 6 days' food left in Malta when the first convoy did manage to get through after the siege. God.
What condition were you in with regard to...
We were the fittest men in the whole of the British Army. We'd been on starvation rations, and there weren't... We defy anybody to have been fitter than we were.
Why?
It's a mystery. When we got out of Malta, we were all medically examined, and everyone was amazed at our fitness. And we trained all the time we were there. Mobility marches, and we were trained as commandos. Must have been the cream of the British Army, although I do say it myself. And I've got nothing else but admiration for the Maltese people who suffered like they did, living under the ground. Rations, they were worse than ours. They were sacrificing everything, and that they didn't complain about us bringing all this on to them. And they never even thought of giving in. They didn't even think of it. I was down Strata, or some people know it as the Gut, one afternoon, and I met one of our chaps. I said, well, what are you doing down here then? I mean, I was lucky. I managed to get down with my mate for a 24-hour pass. Don't know how. And he said, I jumped out. I said, what do you mean jumped out? He said, I was on the folders, he said. He said, I was confined, he said, to camp. Don't know what camp was, a hole in the ground to him. He said, but I drew a big pay, he said. Big pay then was about £2. And he wanted to come into Valletta to spend it. So he done a runner. And he went into Valletta. I said, you better keep out of the way, I said, until it gets dark in case anybody sees you. Yeah, he said, I'm going to have pictures. So he, at the top of Strata Strata, there was a cinema. And he went into the pictures. Things was getting a bit easier then. It was a dirty, murky day. Nasty day. Anyway, my mate and I came out of the of bar. Just as we came out, one raider came over, dropped his bombs. We knew it was at the top of the gap because all the dust and everything else came billowing down. And we rushed up to see what we could do. First thing I passed was a little boy. He was bleeding. I said to my mate, here, get him to the post. Get him to a first aid post, he said. Don't matter about me, he said, in his way they speak their English. I'm all right. I can go myself. He said, there's a lot of people that need a lot of help up there. I'll always remember that Nipper. It's only about 12. Sure enough, the cinema had got a direct hit. You never see anything like it. The projectionist was still alive, but his machine was right through him. He was just hanging on. Dead was everywhere. There was a, I don't know what they call them, but in India we used to call them gharries, four-wheel cart. There was a passengers, driver, horses, they were dead, or the horse. Priests had come from almost nowhere, and they had the holy water and lifting up their cassocks and giving the rites to all the dead as they were laying around. Couldn't do much for them. Saw one bloke, thought he might be all right. But it was a big rock, and I pulled it off him, and his head was like a, I don't know, so I've just put it back. Nothing you could do. It was absolute chaos. We had one casualty in there, and that was that bloke that done a runner. He was the only one that, of my battalion that was killed there. Oh, bit of a shame, really. Well, then Christmas morning.
1941?
No, I'll nip on to 42. A funny thing happened. A bow fighter came overhead and it was flying round. It was doing all sorts. Diving, twisting, turning. So, cool, he said, what the blaze do you think he's up to? Then we get some signal come through. Oh, he said, there's no pilot or nothing in there. He'd bailed out. They took it up for tests. Something had gone wrong. They bailed out. And this plane was flying itself, doing every maneuver it was possible for a plane to do. And then it headed out to sea and dived straight in.